Chair, Timothy P. Lawson, Appellant Counsel, Warren R. Stein, Appellant Counsel.
You may proceed.
Yeah, please, the court. My name is Tim Lawson. I am counsel for the Eatons, for the appellants in this case. And Chief Justice, I'd like to reserve 3 minutes of my time for rebuttal.
Did you say three?
Yes, Your Honor. The fundamental issue in this case is whether a court can require a party to seek county approval for the construction of a road before it grants a legally required easement by necessity. It's our position that this was improper, and when the judge did this in our case, it committed error. The court, I think, is familiar with the facts of this case and extensively laid out the brief, so unless there's questions about the facts of the properties, I'd like to move to the procedural history of the trial.
Let me ask you this. I mean, should the court have inquired at all about the feasibility of building a road? I mean, where exactly did the trial court go wrong? And, I mean, we have this strong policy against unproductive land and landlocked owners. But if a road can't be built in a particular way, then you have a shallow, you know, sort of a hollow right. So, I mean, once the court figured out, okay, well, we need to figure out where the road is going to go, we know this particular path isn't going to work. Should the court have then said, okay, well, back to the drawing board, we got to place the easement somewhere, so let's figure out where to place it. Is that where the court went wrong?
Yes, Your Honor. That is a very good question. I think it's a pertinent question in this case. And I would say that all that was pled in this case that relates to a road at all was the location of the easement.
Right.
And we don't have a problem with the trial court taking into account things as one factor, things like county ordinances and engineering practices. In fact, we had an engineer testify at the trial as to where the location should be, and it was based on engineering practices which are found in the county ordinances. That's really not our issue. Our issue in this case was that the court went further and said, you have to prove that you can build a certain type of road on this easement before I'm going to grant you an easement at all.
Counsel, wasn't it your own expert who raised the issue of county approval? Mr. Chen is the one who brought that up, did he not?
Your Honor, are you referring to the trial or to the post-trial hearings?
I'm referring to, it seems like you had multiple hearings in this.
Yeah, that's
so,
this is...
You called Mr. Chen, and Mr. Chen's the one that first raised the issue of county approval, was he not? Did I read that incorrectly?
If that is correct, and I'm not sure that it is, it was not, county approval was not raised until post-trial hearings, to my knowledge. And I believe they were raised because it was raised by the defendants in the case, and we were responding to it. To the extent that, again, like I just mentioned, the county ordinances do relate to engineering practices, and so Mr. Chen may have made a passing comment about that. That again, is not our issue, and I think particularly in this case, because our first assignment of error goes to the pleadings. We did not seek a road. We did not seek the dimensions of a road. Like this court found in Palmer, where the court, it was a modification of an easement, but there, the plaintiff had said, we want to talk about the dimensions of a road, getting into very specific factors of road beds and those kind of things. That was not our case. My clients were not prepared to seek a road at the time that they sought this easement.
If you ask the court to determine the location of the easement, and Mr. Chen does talk about county approvals and all of that, why is it beyond the pleadings for the court to say if the easement is going to go in this location, and this location happens to be over a mountain hypothetically, why would it be beyond the scope for the court to say, well, tell me if you can even put a road in this location that you're requesting?
Yeah, again, Your Honor, I think to the extent that this would have been raised as it relates to location of an easement, that it would be relevant to the question from the court. But the facts of this case, it needs to be pointed out, in this case, all we sought was an easement over a small sliver of Ms. Bear's property in the southeastern corner, the lower portion, if you will, going up the hill. There was no question about county ordinances or what the county would approve for that small sliver. The only question was on the Eden parent parcel, which was the adjacent parcel, where the road was actually going to run. So, you know, it could be that in some cases that it might be an appropriate consideration for a court. But in the facts of this case, it was clearly not an appropriate consideration because there was no approval issues. There was no county ordinances impacted by the small sliver that we needed to go across Ms. Bear's property.
But inherent in, you want an easement of necessity, you've got to then locate that easement, and if you're going to locate that easement, you've got to figure out, is it even feasible, so that you don't give, so don't you don't set yourself up for further litigation and for basically a legal dead end. So where do we go from here? I mean, do we just say, well, you don't even need to locate the easement, or you do need to locate it, but county approval isn't part of the equation?
Right. Your Honor, I think we go back to the balancing test that was laid out by this court in the Palmer case. There should be...
Balancing only applies when you're trying to determine whether the scope of an existing easement by necessity is to be extended or not. We've never used the balancing test for determining the existence of an easement by necessity.
Yes, Your Honor. And actually, it's my argument in my pleadings that when it comes to an original determination of an easement, that that you should not get into the balancing test because, and I was going to state this, there is a very strong presumption that we don't leave land unproductive and useless. And therefore, if you are going to consider a balancing test or something to that effect, what I was going to say is the presumption has got to be you find a way to make that property useful for the reasonable necessities of the enjoyment of the dominant owner.
Well, I want to go back to the scope of the rule. And you actually ask the court in your prayer for relief to prescribe the dimensions and location of the easement. And not simply do we have an easement by necessity or not. Does the court not have to look at whether the county would approve after you ask for the court to determine dimensions and location, and after your own expert says, well, you can't put it there because it's too steep. It violates the mountainside ordinance.
Your Honor,
you didn't object at that time. I mean, the court essentially did what you were asking it to do.
Your Honor, if we can back up here, all we sought was the dimensions of the easement over the bare parcel. We never sought dimensions of an easement over the parent parcel in our pleadings, and nor was that the case in this matter.
Did you object when the court first said, well, let's look at the parent's parcel? I didn't see any objection there.
No, Your Honor.
So once the parent's parcel has been brought in, you then have to look at the mountainside ordinance. You have to look at whether it's going to actually be a real easement or whether it's simply something on paper. Do you not?
Well, Your Honor, we did object when the court started to look at where the road was going to run and even where the easement was going to be located on the parent parcel.
When the court first brought up the parent's parcel, can you show me during your rebuttal time? Point to where in the joint appendix I'm going to find that objection, if you would. Don't do it now, but during your rebuttal time.
Okay. To be clear, Your Honor, we suggested that we use the parent's parcel.
That's what I thought.
We didn't object to that issue. What we objected to was when the court at the post-trial hearings started to say, well, now you have to show us where you're going to locate the easement on the parent parcel, and you have to show us even more than that, where the road's going to be, show us road plans, and that it can be constructed under the county ordinances.
My difficulty is you brought up the parent's parcel. You asked the court to determine dimensions. You asked the court to determine location, and your own expert brought up the issue of county approval, and now you're saying on appeal, well, the court really shouldn't have considered those issues. And that's hard to get from there to here.
Okay. Your Honor, if I can move past that, I understand the court's position on that.
Let me ask you this. I'm sorry.
That's fine.
I'm wondering if you're getting hung up on an issue that doesn't matter at all. I mean, tell me if I understand or misunderstand your appeal. What difference does it make whether the court had the scope power to locate and discern the exact place where the easement would go? I thought your main argument was, well, whatever, it's got to go somewhere, and we shouldn't get hung up with the parent lot you know, alternatives. It just needs to go somewhere. And the fact that it can't go in the place we really wanted it to go, it doesn't really matter because it still has to go somewhere. And saying that A plus is not going to work out in this case doesn't mean that a B minus is not a good alternative.
Yes, Your Honor. That's actually the point I was going to go to, because the issue in this case is that we should have had the amount of property we needed on the servient owner's property or parcel to reach our lots.
Yeah, let me interrupt you one more time. At some point, this judge didn't transition from here's the place we all are trying to make it work and it doesn't work for whatever reason to, okay, I need to find some place to put it because I can't leave this property land out. Was it ever made clear to the judge that that transition needs to be made, and now we're liberated from all the debates about using the parents' lot partially, fully, whatever? Was that clear?
Well, Your Honor, we argued in the alternative at the trial that if we could not locate the easement on the parents' parcel, that we should have the right to run it wherever we needed to on the bare parcel. That argument was made at trial, and I would say in the motion to reconsider, we said to the judge, Your Honor, because we initially asked the judge for two accesses onto the bare parcel, which were very minimal, the bottom corner and the top corner. The judge denied us the top corner, saying he didn't think that was sufficient or significant. Then the judge says, well, now it's too steep. The county's not going to approve it, which we totally dispute, but we could not prove because we didn't do the soil test and go through all these secondary issues.
Well,
that should not have been.
On the brief point, let's talk about that for a second, because the Davis versus Henning case says that you have to prove a reasonable need for the easement by clear and convincing evidence, right?
Yes, Your Honor.
And in the judge's order, he says he's not giving you the easement because you didn't meet the burden of proving that the county government would approve construction of a roadway in the easement. Isn't that the legal problem?
Yes, Your Honor. I mean, that is what we're raising here in our first assignment of error. To our second assignment of error, that we proved all the elements that the court has ever required for an easement by necessity. We showed the reasonable need that these were landlocked parcels, that they were formerly from a common parcel, and that we had no other right to get there but through this property. Then the judge added this additional consideration that's never been added in any other case of construction of a road, and we say that's legally.
But you're saying that as a matter of law, the judge can't make that consideration a part of the determination of the easement.
Absolutely, Your Honor.
You have one case here, but whenever we have cases before us, we see hundreds, if not thousands, of potential applications. So we have lots of cases when we hear your argument. Suppose in the intervening period, let's say there's a common grantor, real simple case, and this person's landlocked. But in the intervening period, the parcel that you'd have to cover or cross has become a fully developed and completely occupied cemetery. Or suppose it has become a sensitive governmental site. Are you suggesting that the principle that you've just articulated would apply? That you can't consider what amounts to the impossibility of an easement?
Your Honor, again, I think it goes to my initial point about location. When you're considering location, if there is literally no location, say it's through a river or wherever, then yes, a court can consider it. But to go to that next step and say, you have to give us road plans, you have to give us approval by a county, that's where we have an issue, Your Honor. It's not when it, as it relates to location of an easement, but it's as it relates to building a road. That is a step too far that we think any court should never approach and require.
Is the real problem in this case that the judge ended up narrowing your ability to prove your case to this one route?
Yes, Your Honor. I think I started to say that. If the court, and we asked our motion to reconsider for the judge to go back and say, Judge, we can get there if you give us the upper portion which you denied us. And so what we're saying is that there was a way to do this, but the court narrowed us into a position where we could not prove any longer that we could get there.
Counsel, and that brings me to my last question here, and it vexes me. Let's say that we agree with you on your assignment of error number two, that you, in fact, have an easement by necessity, that this is a landlocked parcel. I then go to your prayer for relief, and you ask for a remand solely for a determination of the propriety of reaccessing the bare parcel at the upper crossing.
Yes, sir.
There's no ruling in this case that you have a right at the lower crossing. How are you if we were to say you get an easement by necessity and we're going to give you the upper crossing. How do you still get out to Route 69?
Your Honor, I'm sorry. I assumed in that that you would be remanding, basically saying that we get the crossing, the lower portion.
That
was ordered by the court. In the order, I believe it was the March 2016 order, the court said...
But then it reconsidered.
Your Honor, excuse me.
But then it reconsidered. There's no order that is valid right now for the eastern, for the lower crossing.
Yes, Your Honor. Well, I misspoke then in my brief. What we meant was... The court should give us, by law, the bottom portion, and by engineering purposes should give us the upper portion, because that is what's reasonably necessary under the balancing test.
Well, it's really not a matter of misspeaking. It's your prayer for relief, and that's potentially a problematic. But, okay, I hear your answer.
I apologize, Your Honor. I assume that what we've asked for is that we'd overturn the lower court's decision, and I was asking for additionally in a prayer for relief.
May it please the Court, I'm Warren Stein of the Loudoun Bar for Carla Bear. First, I would say that as the prevailing party below, we can't get past the fact that the trial court did make a ruling that no reasonable necessity for a easement by necessity had been found. That was not accepted to in any measure that meets the normal standards of this court in terms of laying one's finger on the error.
How can that be? I mean, they filed an action seeking that judicial declaration of an easement by necessity. They showed they were landlocked. The court initially agreed with that. And the whole point of their petition is, how can we walk away with nothing and having landlocked parcels?
Because they failed to litigate the only route that they pled, and they litigated a route they had not pled. That is to say that the only relief they seek was a route solely across the river. There's really no mention of the parent parcel other than in saying that they had made an effort to settle the matter and were unsuccessful in doing so.
But how does that help you? If I'm a trial judge and the pleading says, look, I need an easement somewhere, and everyone comes in and they're trying to work out the consensus of where, if I grant one, where it might be, I would assume that if that consensus fell apart for whatever factual reason, I'd still have an official a question mark, which is, where do I put it? Somewhere.
I think that's not exactly correct. I think that what happened here was that the Eatons came in and offered expert testimony that no crossing entirely across Bear was possible because of unstable soils. And therefore, they never pursued any further route. Now, they had sought, please tell us that we have an easement, please define its dimension, please define its location, but they never pursued any such route entirely across Bear.
Were you trial counsel?
I was.
Wasn't there a discussion with the court, Judge, we're trying to do the equitable thing here by going across the Eaton property and coming back on, but if Mrs. Bear wants to choose her poison and have us go directly up her property, we're willing to go back to that. So weren't there negotiations going on during this trial?
No.
No.
Once trial commenced, there were not negotiations of this matter.
Negotiations to the extent, counsel, that you all are having the discussion with the judge of, we're trying to be fair to Mrs. Bear, but if she wants us to continue to pursue a route up her property, we will do that. Didn't that conversation take place?
I'm sure that statement took place from Mr. Boston. I don't think we had any obligation defending against an easement to say, sure, we're going to agree to an easement across us. That's up to them to prove. And I'd also point out...
Well, on the point of proof, address the question I asked appellant's counsel. I mean, isn't it true that Davis versus Henning says the necessary proof is that the claimant has to prove reasonable need for the easement by clear and convincing evidence? Do you agree with that?
I do agree with that.
Okay. And then the judge concludes that the reason they didn't get it is because they didn't meet the burden of proving that the county government would approve construction of a roadway.
Yes.
Where's the legal authority for that?
I'm sorry?
Where is the legal authority for that?
It's implicit in the prayer of the plaintiffs who asked for access.
So the prayer of the complainant drives the burden of proof in a case?
What I'm trying to convey is that they ask specific things of the court, and they ask the court to determine that an easement by necessity did exist, to determine its location and its dimensions for residential purposes and for utilities. It's been quite clear throughout all of this that there's been no question. This hasn't just been about access. This has been about being able to get a road to serve three building lots. That's unquestionably the thrust of this litigation. And that's exactly what the court said in its...
Well, it's also true that this litigation was all about an easement by necessity. And what I'm asking you is, where is there a case that indicates that they have to prove to get an easement by necessity that the government would approve construction of the easement?
Well, it's implicit in the showing of reasonable necessity for the easement. In other words, they said, we want an easement for residential purposes. And they acknowledged, their own expert said, that's a Class C2 road and it has particular parameters. And we can't put it in certain places. And that was the end of the discussion as far as putting a road across solely across there.
May I interrupt you there?
Sure.
I get that last point. And I'm thinking your case through from the perspective of what a trial judge would see and feel and hear in the courtroom. But to me, it turns in the fulcrum of whether or not it was also clear that, Judge, if you can't work it out at the best possible way, we still want you to keep going through the evidence and listen to us tell you we want to put it somewhere else, including if we have to put it across bad soil, right across the middle of the darn bare property. And what did the trial judge hear on that subject?
He heard nothing on that subject, and that's the point. If they had sought such a route, they could certainly have said, we are seeking this C2 road, but if we can't do that, Judge, this is what we want in its stead. But they never did that. They never pursued.
For the sake of argument, suppose they had. Suppose it's just jumping off the transcript. Your Honor, we've been through days of talking about the details of this upper and bottom piece. It's not going to work. We can't figure out how to make it work for whatever reason. But we're still here, and we're still landlocked, and we still need an access of some type, and maybe it won't serve three houses, maybe it'll serve a pup tent. I don't know, but we need something. Would the trial court have erred to say, no, I'm done with this case?
I think perhaps in that instance, yes. Okay. But I think the prayer was very clear that at all times they were seeking residential access, including utilities, for three building lots, and that imposed certain developmental standards. And they were given almost a year in which to prove either that they could meet those standards or that they could secure a waiver of those standards.
So the best argument is their pleadings and their specific advocacy before the trial court narrowed it down to a pretty narrow option, which factually couldn't work out according to the fact finder.
And that they didn't seek any alternative to that.
But counsel, didn't they seek an alternative that would have been the alternative of crossing back onto the bare property? And
well,
the court does, and what I think may have been an improper balancing act at that point, and limits them to going directly up the Eaton property. Doesn't the court limit them to the one route up the Eaton property?
No.
Well, you and I are looking at an entirely different transcript.
No, in fact, the litigation was all about running a route onto the parent parcel.
Onto the Eaton property, back
on. I'm sorry, the confusion is that the plaintiffs are the Eaton children.
Correct.
And there is an Eaton parent track.
Right. They're looking to run onto the parent track, back onto the bare track, one option, which the court denied in the December hearing, I believe, and said we're only going to pursue the option of proceeding directly up the parent track into the children's track, and that's where you have to show me if you can build the road.
No, that's not at all what took place.
Okay, then I am
not close. We had a hearing in which engineering diagrams had been prepared, which went to show that the attempted route which ran through the parent tract could not be fit within the parent tract because of minimum radius determinations of a Class C2 road. In other words, one had to do many switchbacks, and there wasn't sufficient room in which to accommodate those switchbacks while still making a C2 road. So at no point was there litigation of a route entirely through Bear, other than it was initially prayed for and quickly abandoned.
No, I'm not asking Bear. I'm asking parent track, Eaton.
And there was never a time when there was a notion of entirely through the parent track, for that wouldn't have involved Bear.
So your argument really turns on a single proposition, which is the one alternative for the pled easement fell apart factually, and there was no, according to your position, no advocacy for a lesser alternative that just simply goes right across the Bear property.
That's correct. Right, however, so, I will say, I have a number of other points, including that at no time was there a showing that this so-called severance caused the tracks to become landlocked. That was merely a judicial assumption. There was no evidence whatsoever of how the Eaton children tracks, the plaintiff tracks, have ever been accessed. Not before Mr. John Arnold bought them in 1924, not between 1925, not between 1925 and 1939 when he bought the parcel that became my client's parcel, not in the 2 years between then and 1941 when the severance occurred, and not since that time. There was not a word of evidence, not a shred of evidence, as to how those parcels have ever been accessed. And our position
is... Or 1925, I'm not sure they were accessed for a whole lot of purposes, but
That could be, but one of their experts said that he was unaware how the parcel was accessed in 1925 at the time of the purchase. But my point is that if you don't show how it was ever accessed, how do you show that the severance made it landlocked, particularly when these parcels are descended from different tracks, and the only thing they ever had in common was the fact that between 1939 and 1941, they were both owned, at least in part, by John Arnold.
Legally, that may be sufficient, but I want to ask a different question.
Sure.
The Eaton children, there's one parcel that's due north of the other parcel. There's three parcels.
Yes.
And they stack up north to south.
Correct.
It's my question is, why can't all three of the children's parcels access, go through all the way through the parents' parcel without ever touching the Bear parcel at the upper end? That you would have, the northernmost children's parcel would have to have get an easement over the middle children's parcel in order to do that. But did the court ever explore that?
No,
or did the Eatons ever offer that?
I'm trying to recall if there was, I don't think there was ever a discussion of, no, let me take that back, excuse me, it's been 5 years and I've gotten a scenario confused. There obviously was some discussion of not doing the so-called upper crossing and going across Bear into the parents' tract and thence up through the parent tract. The argument at the time was that was too steep, and that's why they wanted to cut back across Bear at the upper crossing. So there was that. However, we don't believe that there's any appropriate use of a parent tract whatsoever. We've argued that there's no such thing as easement by necessity by proxy. You don't get to say that, well, I proved that the Eaton parcels, the children's parcels, are entitled to an easement by necessity over Bear, so therefore Bear has to accept traffic onto her parcel from a non-party who has none of the requisites of easement by necessity.
Well, hear me out. What I'm saying is there are four tracts that are controlled by a member of the Eaton family.
Yes.
And based upon that, did the court not consider whether you never need an upper crossing that touches the Bear parcel if all of the Eaton parcels are working in concert?
Yes, and the court did deny even in its initial order, denied the upper crossing and said, I'm going to grant a lower crossing, but you're going to have to show that you can comply with the requisites to build the road that you say you need.
So what you... I'm sorry.
What then the court just said, and this is a friendly question, so don't immediately say it's wrong. What couldn't the court have just said, following up on Justice Moon's point, okay, let the three of you get together, work it out among yourselves, the three Eaton parcels, and go across your parents' lot. Just leave Bears alone completely.
Because there is no ability to move up the...
it can't be done? It can't physically be done?
Can't physically be done without
so
crossing.
That's not an option at all?
Correct. Okay.
What's not an option?
Going entirely across the parent's lot and not touching the Bear lot at all.
Correct, because the parents have no authority, with their access to the public road, have no authority to expand that access beyond reaching their parcel, and that's by settlement. In other words, the way that the Eaton children have wanted to come up is not the same way their parents come up. They want to come up a different route from the... Beg your pardon.
Go ahead and answer the question.
They want to come up a different route from the public road along a path that also serves as my client's driveway because they cannot come up from the public road on their parents' tract. Therefore, they need to cross Bear in order to cross into the parents' tract.
With the chief's permission, Mayor.
Absolutely.
Why can't they go physically or legally or whatever? Why specifically can't they do that? Why can't they just have their easement run into the parents' property, shoot due east, and get to some road somewhere?
Because in a previous case some years ago, the issue of the parents' access was litigated, and part of the resolution of that case included that they could not further expand that use. In other words, they could not use access from the public road up through the parent tract, and as you're asking, all the way up to the children's tract. They're not permitted to do that, which is why they're saying, instead, we want to come up the Bear path. Now we can cross across Bear, and now we can hop into the parent tract and do what the court is suggesting.
Fair enough, thank you.
Chief, may I?
So it's not Chief. Physically impossible. What you're saying is that it's legally inappropriate.
Correct.
May I ask a question? Let me go back to the conversation that we were having where the court denied the reentry to the Bear track.
Yes, Your Honor.
They did have that conversation. The court did make that ruling, did he not?
Yes.
Where were we missing each other earlier? There were two options on the table. One, going up the parent track, re-entering on the Bear track.
But there was, no, that, I think that may be the confusion.
Okay.
There was never a discussion of a route that didn't include a lower crossing of Bear.
No, I'm not talking about the lower crossing. I'm talking about Bear track to the Eaton parent track back onto the Bear track. One option.
The upper crossing.
Okay.
And the other option, which the court ordered they pursue, Bear track onto the parent track all the way up the mountain.
Correct.
Not recrossing.
Correct. Upper crossing.
And on the December 22nd hearing, when the court precluded the reentry to the Bear track as an option.
Yes, Your Honor.
It left them with one option to pursue.
No, Your Honor.
Okay.
It left them with one option to pursue. It left them with one option to pursue if they
were not talking to you.
If they were going to pursue the crossing on the parent track.
Correct.
It did not in any way address a route entirely across Bear.
That was my question earlier.
And I'm saying, in regard to Justice Kelsey's questions, that simply was never sought. I don't think you can have relief you didn't seek.
Counsel, let me. I've got one additional question also. I asked your opposing counsel about the issue of what I would call the lower crossing, since the other one is identified very specifically as the upper crossing.
Yes, Your Honor.
So the prayer for relief says, remand for a determination of our access across the upper crossing. Is there presently any order of the court that is alive that grants access over the lower crossing or grants access over the southeastern corner of Ms. Vera's property?
In fact, the interim order that had been initially entered over our objections was specifically vacated. So, no, there is no order alive granting any authority to cross Bear at any point. So I think the court's question is well taken, that the relief sought, please remand for a determination of an upper crossing. There is no lower crossing.
Okay. Thank you, counsel.
Your time has expired. Mr. Boson, the circumstances and the dynamics are such, I'm going to give you 2 minutes, even though your time has expired, but we've run almost 4 minutes over.
Thank you, Your Honor. So we'll appreciate that. If I may, and I'll take any other questions, but I did want to speak to Justice Mims' point. What we've asked for in our prayer for relief, as the court's pointed out, is that this honorable court reverse the trial court. What we meant there was undo all the orders. And if we'd argued in our assignment one that the court had already ruled on all the issues in the pleading on March of 2016, therefore, this court could enter an order if it's not also going to remand us to consider the upper crossing, which we requested. That's what we were asking for, that you know, reverse the trial court, everything is done. And if you can't enter a judgment yourself on that, then remand us on that one issue. I don't know if the court, I think, has explored all the issues. I don't know if they have any further questions for me.
I did have the question. We were dealing with whether you had objected to the scope of the court's consideration when it started to consider things such as county approval, mountainside ordinance, things of that nature. I asked you that if indeed, I didn't see an objection, and I asked you if there was an objection, would you point to it in the joint appendix?
Your Honor, I've noted in my summon of errors the objections. I made multiple objections at the hearing. As soon as the court said he was going to consider, the judge said he was going to consider whether the county's approval was required, I think I objected 3 times orally. I then objected in the order. Now, if the court's asking me specifically, did I object to the Eden Parent parcel being brought into the case? No, I did not. We recommended that as an equitable way to help Mrs. Bear. And did I object when our engineer raised, if he did raise, the issue of county approval? No, I did not object. Again, that was raised in relation to location, and we're talking about engineering practices, and that was how it came up. It was never our consideration. I know you mentioned earlier that we mentioned dimensions of an easement. We were not considering a road at this time because my clients did not have the funds to do it. It was not part of our request. And our position is that the judge should have awarded an easement, and then we should have time to seek a road as the dominant owners when we can. It's never been a requirement that a dominant owner has to come requesting an easement with proof that they have the resources to build a road or the proof that the county will approve it at the time they seek an easement. These are two separate things. They should be decoupled. And that's our position, that it was inappropriate to ask us to prove as an element of getting an easement that we could build a road.
All right. Your additional time has expired.
And my question is answered.
Right. Thank you, Your Honor.
Thank you, counsel.
Thank you so much. Call the next case.